The fruits of close reading. The Bible teaches us, in order that future generations may know that I, God, made the Israelite people live in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. Leviticus 23:43. There is an old rabbinic debate whether this verse refers to real, true-to-life Sukkot or clouds of glory provided by God, that is, only figurative Sukkot. As one might expect, the Talmudic debate between Rabbis Akiva and Eliezer in the Babylonian Talmud, Sukkah 11a, continues into the Middle Ages with Rashi and Ramban squaring off against Rashbam and Ibn Ezra. Lest you think that the rabbis are arguing between fanciful and reasonable interpretations, check out Isaiah chapter 4, verses 5 through 6, along with the book of Exodus chapter 40, verse 38, if you're scoring at home, and see if that doesn't persuade you that there is at least some merit on both sides of the question. However, I prefer that we focus on the plain sense interpretation and see where a close reading of the text might lead. Let us step back and consider Leviticus chapter 23, verse 43, in both literary and historical context. Of all the Torah's festival calendars, the one in Leviticus chapter 23 is the most complete. It begins with a kind of preamble, and I quote, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, These are my fixed times, the fixed times of the Lord, which you shall proclaim as sacred occasions." Following these two verses, the Torah addresses Shabbat, Pesach or Matzot, including the commandments to count the Omer, the holiday of Bikurim or First Fruits, the festival that is elsewhere called Shavuot, Teruah, the holy day that the rabbis called Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, actually called in the Bible Kippurim. And finally, Sukkot, the festival of booths. At the conclusion of this long list of festivals, the Torah offers a peroration, as it were. Those are the set times of the Lord that you shall celebrate as sacred occasions, bringing offerings by fire to the Lord, burnt offerings, meal offerings, sacrifices and libations, on each day what is proper to it, apart from the Sabbaths of the Lord, and apart from your gifts, and from all your votive offerings, and from all your freewill offerings that you give to the Lord. Leviticus chapter 23, verses 37-38. Following this conclusion of the festival calendar, the Torah surprises us by stating an additional set of laws about Sukkot in verses 39-43, laws that are mentioned nowhere else in the Torah. And I quote, "Mark, on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the yield of your land, you shall observe the festival of the Lord to last 7 days, a complete rest on the first day and a complete rest on the 8th day. On the first day, you shall take the product of hadar trees, branches of palm trees, boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall observe it as a festival of the Lord for 7 days in the year. You shall observe it in the 7th month as a law for all time throughout the ages. You shall live in booths 7 days. All citizens in Israel shall live in booths, in order that future generations may know that I made the Israelite people live in booths, Sukkot, when I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I, the Lord your God." Readers accustomed to rabbinic practice will see in this paragraph the two central commandments of the holiday. First, taking the four species, the arba minim, in other words, the lulav and the etrog, and also dwelling in Sukkot during the festivals. But readers attuned to the plain sense approach to Scripture, or reading in context, what we call pshat, will likely see this section as a kind of addendum, an added section meant to fill out the observance of the festival with prescriptions that were not contained in the section originally devoted to Sukkot. Look up verses 33 through 36 in chapter 23 of Leviticus in a Bible on your own time. In fact, the Bible itself bears witness to this possibility of the passage being an addendum. The community that returned to Israel after the decree of King Cyrus of Persia sometime in the mid-6th century BCE, and that paradoxically called itself the Exile, or Gola in Hebrew, gathered under the leadership of Ezra and Nehemiah some 100 years later to hear the Torah read and expounded. The Bible records this scene in the book of Nehemiah, chapter 8, verses 1 through 3 and 13 through 17. The entire people assembled as one man in the square before the water gate, and they asked Ezra the scribe to bring the scroll of the teaching of Moses, which the Lord had charged Israel. On the first day of the seventh month, Ezra the priest brought the teaching, the Torah, before the congregation, men and women, and all who could listen with understanding. He read from it, facing the square before the water gate, from the first light until midday. To the men and the women and those who could understand, the ears of all the people were given to the scroll of the Torah. On the second day, the heads of the clans of all the people and the priests and the Levites gathered to Ezra the scribe to study the words of the teaching. They found written in the teaching that the Lord had commanded Moses that the Israelites must dwell in booths in Sukkot during the festival of the seventh month, and that they must announce and proclaim throughout all their towns and Jerusalem as follows: Go out to the mountains and bring leafy branches of olive trees, pine trees, myrtles, palms, and other leafy trees to make booths, as it is written. So the people went out and brought them and made themselves booths on their roofs, in the courtyards of the house of God, in the square of the water gate, and in the square of the Ephraim gate. The whole community that returned from the captivity made booths and dwelt in the booths. Now the Israelites had not done so from the days of Joshua son of Nun until that day, and there was very great rejoicing. From this passage, it seems clear that Ezra understood the Torah to command here, not two distinct commandments, but only one. The Judeans were to take the various branches, etc. Admittedly, the list is not identical with the one in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 40. Not as lulav and etrog, a separate ritual, rather as Jacob Milgram explains in his magisterial Anchor Bible Leviticus commentary, volume 3, pages 2063 to 2067, Ezra connects Leviticus 23:40 with two verses later, 23:42, and determines that the Judeans should use the branches as building materials to build the Sukkot that the Torah requires. Moreover, the Bible seems to state that the Israelites, remarkably, from the time of the Israelite settlement of Canaan under Joshua and continuing through the whole period of the Judges and Israelite and Judean kingdoms, that these Israelites had never fulfilled the Torah's requirement to celebrate the festival of Sukkot in precisely the way that Ezra and Nehemiah taught, in other words, by building Sukkot. But whatever the exact intent of Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 17, there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. It looks as though Ezra is trying to build a practice through close reading of the text. We began with a Talmudic debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer about whether the Torah's description of Sukkot should be understood literally or figuratively. It seems that Ezra provides an early example of how someone might institute a ritual practice that is rooted in a literal understanding of the Torah, here of the relationship between Leviticus 23:40 and 23:42. Ezra's ruling did not stand the test of time, however, and since antiquity, rabbinic Jews have discovered, as it were, two distinctive commandments in Leviticus 23, verses 39 to 43. May we likewise rejoice in this festival of Sukkot, shake our lulav and our etrog, and dwell in our Sukkot, however we build them. Chag Sameach.